At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to Dark Florida, the podcast where we explore the strange, the haunted, and the unexplained. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland. This week, we're diving into something truly fascinating, the official FBI Bigfoot file, a tiny 22-page case from the 1970s that sat sealed away for over 40 years, until it suddenly resurfaced in 2019, right in the middle of the government's UFO disclosure wave. We're talking timing, secrecy, evidence, and what this file might actually mean for the Bigfoot mystery. But before we get to that, if you're new here, make sure to follow the show on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast for everything that's happening behind the scenes, and subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/@darkflorida411. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And if you've had a strange encounter or would like to be a guest on the show, I'd love to hear from you. Email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. All right, let's crack open this file. This week, we're diving right into a strange little corner of American government history that sat untouched and hidden away for over 40 years. This is the story of the FBI, a single hair sample in one of the most quite fascinating Bigfoot investigations ever documented. And I am joined by seasoned Bigfoot field researcher, Marion Gant. We're bringing Marion in to share her insights on the case. Marion, thank you so much for coming on Dark Florida again and for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to get into this file here. This story all starts back in the mid-1970s, 1976 to be exact. And this was a time when Bigfoot fever was sweeping through the Pacific Northwest and sightings were happening everywhere. This is when researchers were beginning to form organizations to look into the phenomena. And the public was obsessed with the Patterson-Gimlin film that had shaken the world less than a decade earlier. And right in the middle of all of this was an official FBI case file that was opened. Yes, the same FBI known for mob investigations, kidnappings, and counterintelligence suddenly had a file that was labeled Bigfoot. The reason this file exists is because of one man, Peter Byrne. And if you're not familiar with Byrne, he is one of the big names in the early Sasquatch research. He was a well-respected, well-funded investigator who treated the subject with seriousness and with discipline. And Brian was not a hoaxer, and he wasn't a weekend warrior. He ran the Bigfoot Information Center, and he was considered at the time one of the most credible figures in the field. And this was when, in 1976, Byrne submitted a hair and tissue sample to the FBI because he believed it might belong to a creature that is, quote, not known to science. And that language, coming from someone who was meticulous as Byrne is important. Now, what makes this case fascinating isn't the sample itself, but it is who tested it. because normally the FBI doesn't test Bigfoot evidence and they don't usually take cryptid cases and they don't run hair samples for civilian researchers. And yet in this particular case, they did. That's what is one of the many things that makes this case stand out. They handed Brian's sample over to their scientific and technical service division. And this is the same division that handles violent crimes, evidence, and unidentified biological materials. So the question becomes, why did this sample get federal treatment? And what made this one unusual enough for the FBI to typically bend its own rules? Marion, what does it say to you that the FBI even agreed to analyze this hair sample at all?
I think it had something to do with what was going on during the 70s. I think they were more open to investigating otherworldly phenomena because of the different reports they were receiving. In addition to Bigfoot, they had cattle mutilations. They're investigating the UFO sightings. That's where the Condon report came out, Project Blue Book. There was also reports of a humanoid encounter at Fort Dix where the alien was shot and killed. Travis Walton was abducted. Stories of men in black going around telling UFO witnesses to keep quiet. And then you also had Uri Geller traveling the U.S. supposedly bending spoons and other phenomena. I don't know if they were involved in these investigations for purely scientific matters or if it because the public was crying for answers or if they just had somebody in their administration that was more open into looking into some things outside the box.
Right. And I love that you mentioned the men in black because that's going to come back as we get further along into this episode. What do you think it is about this specific sample that caught the FBI's attention?
This was brought on because Peter Byrne had contacted them at his Bigfoot Investigation Center. They had been told by other people that the FBI had received samples, had examined them, and determined they were of unknown origin. So Peter Byrne had contacted them about that. Also about that time, I believe the 1975 edition of the Washington Environmental Atlas came out. And on it, there was a blurb about Bigfoot, and it also mentioned that the FBI had hair samples. So that started some of his correspondence with the FBI asking, did you receive the samples? Did you analyze them? What were the results? At the time, Jay Cochran of the FBI told him, no, we searched our records. We haven't found anything, which that, knowing the FBI, may not be completely truthful.
Do you know how hard that would be to do today? I know you've spent a lot of time out in the field researching this phenomena. Have you ever tried to get any physical evidence tested?
No, not myself. I've collected some. At the time, I made mistakes. My son had a sighting, and we found evidence of something had pulled a palmetto out of the ground and was chewing on it. We found the leftover debris. I made the mistake with DNA of taking the samples and putting them in the freezer, which at the time, I learned that it would destroy the cells because as they expand in the freezer and contract when they melt, it ruins the cell walls. DNA goes everywhere. I've since been told that that's not a problem anymore because the science is improving immensely. Things have improved so greatly that after 2015 and on, it's less than $1,000 to decode a human genome. It's cheaper, but finding somebody willing to do it is the other problem.
If someone came across something that they might deem as DNA evidence in their research, how would you recommend storing it so that way it could potentially be tested today?
If you get a sample, like say you found blood on a branch or on a cut window, something cut itself on a window, the best thing to do is to take a razor or something and scrape some off onto a piece of paper. Fold that paper around it, store that paper in an envelope, and store that possibly in a bag in a cool, dry area with low humidity. Some wet samples you can put in the freezer now that the technology has advanced. Also, but they do prefer that you dry it. Same thing. You just put it somewhere. You dry it completely on its own. You don't try to force dry it. Then store it in a paper bag somewhere. The thing people forget about when you're collecting DNA is it's not about bacteria. people think alcohol and stuff. What you're doing is you don't want contamination from your DNA or other DNA in the environment is the goal.
Now, here's where things with this case get even stranger. The FBI completed its analysis in the 1970s, but this case file didn't see the light of day until 2019. That's a 40-year blackout because for four decades, this little investigation sat sealed in government archives. And suddenly, with no public pressure, no FOIA request, or big announcement, it gets released during a wave of UFO and UAP disclosure. Now, 2019 is the same window where the Pentagon's UFO program was revealed, military pilots were beginning to speak publicly, and the government was suddenly comfortable talking about the unknown. So my question is, why release the file then? I always wonder why now, and why at that moment in history when transparency around the paranormal and the unexplained was starting to shift. And this week, we're not asking whether hair was Bigfoot or deer. We're asking what it means that the FBI quietly stepped into the world of cryptid research and then kept that fact hidden for 40 years. And I really appreciate that you're here to help me break this all down because you're someone who has been in the woods and on the trails and has been in the research trenches long enough to understand why this case still matters today. Because with that 40-year gap, this case was just sitting in those FBI archives where no one outside of a handful of people even knew that that test happened. Now, think about this. We had multiple presidential administrations that have come and went. The entire government programs were created and dissolved, and the world has completely changed, and yet this Bigfoot file still stayed sealed away. If this was something trivial, or if it was just an ordinary deer hair from day one, why preserve it at all? And why not just toss the correspondence into a shred pile like the thousands of other irrelevant cases? I think that the release of this was in that era where we were getting leaked Navy videos and Congress was openly grilling the military about unexplained aerial encounters. Now, that brings me to the fact that this file surviving is meaningful. And government agencies, they throw away an incredible amount of material every single year. If something is considered irrelevant or unimportant, it's destroyed. But this was categorized, reference numbered, and preserved, and eventually declassified, which tells us something that the FBI treated this like a legitimate case and was not a joke. And now we have to remember that Peter Byrne wasn't just a random guy. He was a respected, connected, and taken seriously. And the FBI, you know, was kind enough to respond to him. And it just makes me wonder why someone like Byrne, who could probably tell the difference between deer and Sasquatch hair, would even submit a sample that he didn't fully vet himself and think was legit. What does that say to you?
I think it's a distraction. I think they held on to the report because they knew that they were constantly going to get this question. So I find it hard to believe that, like you said, Peter Byrne did not realize that this was a deer tissue because he was a big game hunter. He spent a lot of times out in the wild. He had originally found the samples when he received reports from employees of the Forestry Service and a couple scientists that were out there. Both of them, there were two sightings of the Bigfoot. The employees took him out to find the tracks. As they researched, as they looked around, that's where they found the hair and tissue tagged in a tree. According to the report, it had 15 hairs on a piece of tissue. Again, I do not think he would not realize that it was a deer, that right. It wasn't. Right. So the question is, the sample, supposedly the sample was returned. I don't know where it is at the time, but it'd be very convenient for them to run this report, say, oh, nope, it's deer. And then for the next 40 years, if anybody wanted to know, they could hand it out. I believe in 2019 is when the Black Vault website, the owner of that, did a Freedom of Information request. And that's where he got the file. And I guess eventually they put it into their, it's called vault.fbi.gov, where they have other files that are open to the public.
Yeah, it comes at a really interesting time during this disclosure era where it really feels like there has been a shift. And even in like the public consciousness towards Bigfoot, And now we have FBI files to back it up that it was serious enough for them to, at one point, investigate. And I just wonder about the timing of it all. I find it really interesting.
Yes. I mean, as everybody knows, the last 5 or 10 years has been very, very rocky in this world. And I think they're looking for anything to keep people off their back because their reputation is mud right now.
It feels like there's this change in tone where the taboo is starting to lift, where we're talking about these supernatural and paranormal encounters on a much grander scale, where we are having congressional hearings now. What other things do they have sitting in their lab that could be part of that broader pattern of a controlled disclosure? Because we're finding that they've had a lot of this stuff for a long time. I mean, 40 years is significant. And I understand national security and things like that. And that's how a lot of these things, I think, get tucked away for so long, especially when we talk about events like Roswell and other things, that it's top secret.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting, though. I don't think they're as clever as they think. Because even though the file's 40 years old, again, it just gives us more time, more knowledge, more experience to use when we're looking at this file. Like we just said, how does Peter Byrne not know that this tissue sample is not from a deer? That wouldn't have been questioned before, because the FBI as an institution had such a great reputation, everybody would just assume Peter Byrne made the mistake. But now, as time goes on, we've learned, we're like, no, I don't think so. I think Peter Byrne was very, very good in his field, and it may be the FBI either made a mistake, which that's unlikely. So it's possible that, yeah, it was part of the cover-up. They just decided they were going to say it was deer, whether it was or wasn't, and leave it at that.
Right. And I wonder why step forward in 2019 and say, yes, we did investigate the Bigfoot sample, unless, again, if that was part of the larger cultural shift and slowly warming up the public to the idea that the unknown is in fact real, and it's real enough for our government to examine, sort of how we talk about that slow drip of information, because when it comes to that slow disclosure that we talk about.
Consider this. Mm-hmm. Maybe they realized that we are getting close to answering the question. Of course, people have been saying that for all these decades, right? But maybe at this point they realize that we are getting close, that people are finding their own sources of information, that they're not trusting what the FBI is telling them, and they want to get ahead of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the fact that this is only a 22-page file is laughable, and then it's just a small file from the 70s. I believe they have more information than what they're letting on. I definitely do. I think that there's more to the story that, who knows, maybe we'll have to wait another 40 years to find out.
Well, what's interesting is when I was reading this file, there was a mention of the Washington 1975 Washington Environmental Atlas. Peter Byrne brings it up in his correspondence with the FBI. He brings up two things. One, at his center, he had been told by different individuals that samples were sent to the FBI of Bigfoot hair, and they determined it was of unknown species. And then in this Washington Environmental Atlas, there's a blurb about Bigfoot. There's a little map showing the different sightings, some tracks, and some basic information. And in that information, it said the FBI was sent a sample and tested it, and it was of unknown origin. So that's in his correspondence. He asked about that. And the FBI came back and said, we can't find anything, but we'll go ahead and test your stuff anyway. I find interesting, but then also I found out that from lawsuits that happened over the Oklahoma bombing, somebody submitted a Freedom of Information request. The FBI has several different systems they use. The one they mainly use for Freedom of Information requests is mainly driven. It doesn't search what they call the universe of records. And you also have to have certain keywords. If you don't give it the right keywords, then it's not going to find the file. The keywords are created by the agents entering the files. You have to tell them, no, I don't want you to do just this search. I want you to search this and this, and I want you to cross-reference with the individual offices. And I also want you to look at several storage options that are off-site, that aren't part of the system. So when they were telling Peter Byrne that, no, we don't have anything, we can't find anything about that, that may not be the truth.
What does it tell you as a field investigator that Byrne described the hair sample as, quote, unusual?
Going back to, he was very experienced in the outdoors, big game hunter. He did some of the first water rafting down a river in China. Him and three other guys snuck into China to raft down this river. I mean, the guy knew what he was talking about. And for him to determine that this is unusual, it probably was unusual.
Yeah. Now, with a case like this and the 40-year silence, do you think that there's probably more evidence that's hidden in private or government archives?
Yes. Yes, I do. I believe even the Smithsonian has admitted that they don't know everything that's in storage in the files.
I know that. Send me up there. Send us up there. With you being retired now, you can get up there and just send me daily recaps of what you find.
I would love to go through those.
It reminds me of, I think it's one of the last Indiana Jones movies that came out. And in the movie, I think they're getting the crystal skull, and it pans to one of those military officers walking a box, and they're walking down hallway. And then they go in and there's this giant warehouse, and they put it in on the shelf. And then the camera kind of pans back and you see all the other boxes and things that are listed there as top secret. So it's like, I can only imagine what is probably sitting on a shelf somewhere would probably make our minds blown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the government has a habit of deciding what they want us to know, deciding how much we can handle, deciding what the truth is going to be instead of the actual truth. And for some reason, there may be many reasons they're trying to hide it from us. It could be biblical reasons. People, you know, if there's something else out there that can think and has a will like man, blows the Bible and all the other religious teachings out of the water. It could be economic reasons, because if Bigfoot is ever accepted as a real biological entity, there is going to be vast swaths of land that is going to be made off limits because of them.
Right. Now, as someone with decades of boots on the ground research, there have been hundreds, if not thousands, of eyewitness encounters. Now, witness testimony is so important. We have learned so much through the years based off of eyewitness testimony from people who have had that Class A sighting. We've learned about different behaviors, colors, sizes, anatomy, and so on. A lot of good information has been shared, even locations where researchers previously maybe didn't think that a Bigfoot was, but we have a witness who has had an encounter. We now know they're in that area. So we've taken a lot of evidence from that. And you do have boots on the ground researchers like yourself who have come across things in the field, whether it's that Class A sighting or some of those Class B and Cs where you're coming across footprints with the metatarsal break and that fit that Bigfoot description. That's a piece of evidence. Other people have come across hair. I know we know some people who have had some hair tested, and we've seen other Bigfoot evidence that's been collected since just this particular hair sample. Why do you think that the scientific community hasn't recognized some of the better pieces of evidence that do exist in the Bigfoot field, such as, I mean, I've seen some really excellent castings of footprints that have that metatarsal break and have just that classic Sasquatch look. We've seen them. We've come across other researchers, and even in our own research, we've had some things that are really compelling. What do you think it will take for the scientific community to recognize Bigfoot?
Well, that's more like a two-part question. One, the evidence being accepted, The main problem is how it's collected and how it's submitted. You have to be able to prove that you followed the correct steps in collecting it, the right pictures, the right castings. Of course, tracks are mostly what we find. But then even if you do go through those steps, they have no way to know if it's not an elaborate hoax because they have nothing to compare it to. It's kind of a catch-22. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? As right. far as what it'll take, the best evidence out there would be a group of Sasquatch in captivity. The next best would be a dead Bigfoot. After that, maybe a head, a foot, a hand. Because we have collected blood. We have collected hair. We have collected tracks.
Well, and I almost think it will never be accepted. And not in maybe the way that it is. I don't think that science will ever come out and recognize it. But when we talk about other samples that have been collected in the 1800s and throughout other times documented in history, there have been giant skeletons that have been found and taken, like you said earlier, to the Smithsonian. And that's why some people joke about the Smithsonian has the bones. That if there's a cover up from the top down, I almost feel like any piece of legitimate evidence will probably get put in one of those boxes like we just talked about earlier. The deeper you look at this case, and I know I keep circling back to the timing, but I'm big on timing, I'm big on patterns, and I ask myself, why now? And why release something after 40 years? And why release it at that exact moment in 2019, right in the middle of that UFO disclosure? And I think that just brings me to the suspicious timing of this tiny case file. Because here's the thing, this entire FBI file is only 22 pages long. 22 pages. And on a case that involved laboratory testing, government correspondence, and the involvement of one of the most well-known Bigfoot researchers of that era. For a government that documents absolutely everything, this almost to me just feels a little too curated. Almost like an X-file that has been trimmed down before it's been handed over. Honestly, I'm having a hard time believing that a case like this involving some sort of an unusual biological sample with a respected investigator and that direct request for that forensic analysis only generated a 22-page report. That's just not how the FBI operates.
Agreed. One thing I noticed in the report is it did not have any background on where the sample was found, who found the sample, how Peter Byrne even heard about it. I found that in other websites, but it's not in the file, which to me, in any investigation, you want to know the history of the sample. Where was it collected? Where the habitat? What animals are there?
Certainly. Yeah, it definitely felt incomplete.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I think that that raises the question that I haven't heard anybody ask, which is why Peter Byrne, of all people, would submit deer hair to the FBI. Because Byrne wasn't a rookie investigator or inexperienced. He had spent years examining reported Sasquatch hair samples, and he knew what deer hair looked like and felt like. To your point, he was a big game hunter. And deer hair tends to be short, hollow, and very brittle. Most eyewitnesses describe Bigfoot hair as long and coarse and very wiry, sometimes compared to like pubic hair almost. So why would someone as seasoned as Byrne send something that basic? Was it misidentified? Was it contaminated? Or was that official conclusion simply the easiest explanation to give the public?
Probably the latter. It was easiest to give the public a fake result to shut the file down, to shut the investigation down, to stop questioning, and to close the case. They knew that if they came back and said unknown, it would definitely not stay in an atlas or as anecdotal stories from individuals. It would be widely publicized, especially given that Peter Byrne with the Yeti skull cap and hand from Nepal, They knew it would go widespread, the information that they found hair from an unknown species, and they didn't want that to happen.
honestly, here's the part where I pause, which is, even if that sample that he had submitted had come back as something unknown, something outside of wildlife and something that would truly be anomalous, my question is, would the FBI actually tell us? Would they actually say, yep, this belongs to a primate species that isn't supposed to exist? Because the ramifications of a discovery like that are massive. Look at the alien disclosure and look how long the government has delayed, deflected, denied, and rebranded the UFO phenomena. And if they still can't tell the full truth about the crafts that we're seeing in the skies, why would they come out and openly admit an undiscovered hominid is walking through the forests of North America?
Oh, the ramifications, biblical. It would put a lot of religions into question. Economic, logging, farming, all sorts of agricultural.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that as theories, especially when you talk about the logging industry. It was so booming and such a big part of the economics of our earlier country when we were still developing this new land. Logging was huge. And you hear so many stories of Bigfoot encounters from the logging companies. So I think you're right. I think it would definitely have some major impacts. And not to mention for the people who do still think that this is so taboo and doesn't exist, how earth shattering that would be for the government to come out and say, hey, while you're out on your hike at Yosemite, be on the lookout for a 7 foot tall hairy man, no big deal. Or 1,000 pound bipedal creature, no biggie.
Yeah, that is if they'll even let you hike the Yosemite after that. Plus, there's also, according to some people out there, Bigfoot being an interdimensional being or Bigfoot having some relation with UFOs, there's also security reasons they may want to tell people. And maybe. Absolutely. That's why they, you know, it was released in 2019 along with the UAP information. Maybe there is a tie that they don't want to tell us about, a connection.
Wow. I love that you just went there. Wow, you tied that right into the UFO connection. Nice. I like that. You know, that's right up my alley because honestly, I don't think that secrecy stopped back in the 1970s because there's just too many stories from researchers who say that they were approached by strange men in black after finding tracks or reporting those vocalizations or after discovering evidence that they were not supposed to have. You hear it all the time of people who have captured something and suddenly something happens to the evidence or it's corrupted or they get a visit and they're scared and they're not talking anymore. There's stories like we mentioned about the 1800s, but there's stories about these bodies that are being recovered and whisked away, about those unmarked helicopters that are showing up in remote areas, sometimes hovering very low right before or after a sighting, or a group records something very compelling that maybe they shouldn't have seen. These stories don't come from just one region, one state, or even one decade. They span states and generations and different types of investigators. So I can't help but feel like the government has kept tabs on Bigfoot research far more than they would like to admit. And this little 22-page file, I feel like it's just the tip of something much bigger and much older. So when I look at this case, I just don't see a hair analysis. I see the timing, I see secrecy, and I see a breadcrumb that was dropped in that very controlled wave of disclosure. And I see a reminder that when it comes to Bigfoot, just like with the UFOs, that the government knows far more than they are willing to tell us. If you had to sum this case up in one sentence, what would you say that it means?
I think this case means, I think this file shows that the FBI thought there was something to all these reports. They don't want to admit it. They don't want to go down that rabbit hole for various reasons. It may not even be a rabbit hole to them. It may be a very well-paved road that they don't want to get to the end of. But a 22-page report is a joke. a joke when you consider reports you've seen of even just hair in a criminal case is going to have more. The fact that they released it in 2019, possibly something to do with the UFOs. Maybe there is a connection. Maybe it's redirection because of all the political upheaval that we're going through.
Right. Now, what do you think that this file adds to the bigger picture of the Bigfoot mystery?
Bigger picture, I think it shows that the FBI and the government itself is willing to cover up. They're willing to lie. And in many other cases, not just Bigfoot, but everything, they want to control the narrative. And they want it to expose whatever at their pace, not our pace, not in a timely manner, but at their pace for some reasons that they have for control.
I feel like this case is really a spotlight and just a tiny window into how much happens really behind the closed doors and how these files the public will never see, and how many mysteries are just sitting there in those government archives just collecting dust. And the secrecy is the part that really lingers with me, because the FBI didn't destroy this file. In fact, they kept the correspondence, the notes, the analysis for 40 years, and you don't preserve something like that unless on some level it matters. And then after those decades of silence, they release it at a moment when the government is fully acknowledging other unexplained phenomena. So that's not random, and that's not a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences, and it's just not to me. And as we mentioned, that 22-page file feels like a prologue, like a teaser. Almost the kind of case that you would see on the X-Files, and it carries those fingerprints of a larger story. It's all part of that bigger history, and one that was trimmed down and so condensed and sanitized before it was ever released to the public, because we will never know the truth behind that sample. We may never know whether it was misidentified or if the conclusion was simplified, or whether the real findings were just never meant to see the light of day. We just don't know. But what we do know is this, and that is that the FBI took this case seriously, and a man like Peter took it seriously. And people in this field know how rare that level of attention is, because you almost never see them give, I mean, at least not in the last 40 years that I'm aware of, a case this much attention. I think people would freak out if they got the FBI saying, hey, can we test your samples? That would really give validity to, I feel like, a lot of investigators who have come across good pieces of evidence.
You know, one thing I didn't find when I was reading, and maybe it'd be someplace, maybe one of your listeners will know, is I know that Peter Byrne never saw the file until it was released in 2019. He was in Nepal when they sent the results of their study. They sent it to a Howard Curtis at the Academy of Applied Science, who was a co-sponsor of the Bigfoot Center. And he acknowledged, he sent a thank you letter acknowledging he received it, thank you for looking at it, and that he would forward it to Peter, and it either got lost or he forgot. But Peter's claims that when it came out in 2019, he had never seen the file. What I don't understand is why somebody didn't bring up the fact that they said the sample was deer. If he agreed, if he disagreed, why did he think that sample was special enough to send in, especially given the experience he had? I just wish that somebody would have asked him for his response to the report.
Do you have any advice for any field researchers out there, or people who are interested in evidence collection or getting into looking into the phenomena?
There are sources out there. There are police forensic manuals who have sources of information on how to do things the right way. One of the things I deeply regret is having DNA in my hands. I had plants that had been chewed and bitten and gnawed on, and I saved them incorrectly. I did not have evidence. I could be sending them to Darby Ockhart for his study, and I can't.
I feel like if this little forgotten Bigfoot file teaches us anything, it's that the truth doesn't always come out all at once, and sometimes it slips out in pieces, 22 pages at a time. Thank you, Marion, for joining me tonight on this journey into the FBI Bigfoot file. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your insight, especially as someone with boots on the ground and decades of experience. I really appreciate the insight that you bring to a case like this. Thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
That concludes another episode of Dark Florida. Thank you so much for listening and for joining us on that journey into the FBI Bigfoot file. It's such a tiny case with massive implications. And if this week's episode taught us anything, it's that the government has dipped its toes into mysteries far stranger than they would like to admit. And sometimes the truth hides in the smallest, dustiest of folders. If you enjoyed this episode and want to follow more of our investigations, make sure to stay connected. You can find us on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast and subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/@darkflorida411. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And if you have a story to share or have had an encounter or would like to be a guest on the show, feel free to email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Again, thank you so much for listening. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland, reminding you to keep your eyes open and to always trust your instincts. Until next time, stay curious and stay strange.